You're listening to Writing Snippets, the podcast about writing. Your hosts for today are...
Lauren.
Ava.
Jocelyn.
Lillian.
Alice.
Episode 19, Critiquing Part 2.
Welcome to Writing Snippets. We are going to talk about how to critique a novel. What are some things you should focus on while you're critiquing? Let's go on to dialogue.
Dialogue is huge. If you have bad dialogue... it ruins your story.
Yeah. I have the hardest time with differentiating between the dialogue of men and the dialogue of women. Mm. Because there is a difference. And I know there is a difference, but I couldn't for the life of me tell you what it is.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you need to pay attention to in critiques. Not just, you know, that you have the gender differences clear in your dialogue, that you have your character differences clear in your dialogue, and sometimes even age differences clear. In your dialogue, you know, your parent is going to talk significantly different than their 12-year-old child. And you need to get that across in your dialogue and make it character appropriate. And then another thing with dialogue is pay attention to the fact that you don't want just a solid block of dialogue without anything going on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So watch for those.
Or dialogue just for giving information.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need
to give information, but...
But two characters talking that already know this information and you're just giving it to the audience.
There are some authors who use he said, she said, you know, nonstop. And there are some who don't use he said, she said at all. And they use taglines instead. I think you have to have a balanced mix of the two and even dialogue without tags or...
Yeah.
The word said.
Or if you just have a whole page of dialogue, you got to break it up with action and
while these people are talking, they're doing something. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just looking out here or twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah, in real life, people might just sit there on the couch and talk for 2 hours. But in a book, that's really boring to read about. So
even if they're sitting on the couch for 2 hours, they're still looking at the mirror across the room.
Or thinking something.
Yeah, thinking about what's going on at home. Or
thinking about what an idiot the person is talking to.
That's true. And dialogue is the perfect place to showcase their personality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So if personality's not coming across in dialogue, you need to zip it up. Pump things up a little.
Sometimes I'll catch things that are modern dialogue in a historical story or, you know, fantasy that is set in.
And not just dialogue, though. You run into modern American slang in a novel, or you run into words that wouldn't belong in that particular culture. Mm-hmm. So those are things you need to look for as well.
Yeah. How about background information?
Information is really good, just not all at once.
Yeah.
And not too much.
You have to have it, you know, in the right places for your readers to follow what they need to follow. And
what's important for the story.
Yeah. Sometimes you can give too much because as writers, we know our characters and we know our world so well that sometimes it's really fun to just give all that we know because we think it's so cool. We want other people to think it's that cool too, but it can be a little much.
On the other hand, we know the story and we know the background and we know the world, and so we just automatically assume that it's there, that everybody else can see it as well, and so we don't give enough description, so... go both ways.
Okay, show versus tell. This is a big one, and, you know, people talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's one that's really hard to do. It takes a lot of thought, a lot of work, because you just want to say it, you want to tell it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot harder to show it.
Yeah.
So...
I don't know how to.
What are some things you notice in the critiques you do that you correct?
I remember somebody telling me once about there was a character. The character walked into the room, and I described the things in the room. But there was another way to do that. That character walks into the room and she sets her hand on the armoire that's at the side. She walks across a hardwood floor. She takes off her shoes and feels the rug under her feet or sees the sun or the rain coming through the senses,
other than just see.
Yeah,
that's really good.
And as far as emotion goes, instead of saying he was angry, have him take a fork and stab his dinner and
yeah,
show it.
Yeah, show it through gestures and through the manner in which someone's talking, stuff like that.
And facial expressions. One thing at a workshop I recently went to with an editor, she said, you know, she pointed out a couple places in my story where she wanted a facial expression to show the what they were feeling and thinking instead of me telling, you know, what she was feeling.
I think that's where our people watching comes, because there are so many different ways that so many people portray their emotions. And if we're watching the people around us, the people on the bus, the people on the street, the people in the school class, we're seeing different emotions played out, and it gives us so much more scope to use.
So when we have to sort of mentally record, I saw this guy do this one thing.
I became a writer to avoid people, so I'll just watch some more TV.
That works too. Actors are good at that.
But also going back to dialogue, when someone is angry or when they're amused by something, their dialogue is going to be different as well.
Mm-hmm.
The words that they use are going to be different.
Mm-hmm. And even if they're angry and they don't show it in their dialogue, that tells a lot about the character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So everything our characters do is going
to
give
us... Sure, harder to portray, though.
I know, because it can be interpreted so many different ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Once your words are out there, they're permanent.
So emotion, we kind of covered that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on emotion?
The
melodramatic.
Yeah. Avoid melodramatic. Dramatic. Don't be melodramatic.
Yeah.
So.
Over the top emotion that's gushy or that's just blubbery.
Yeah, and also don't go too sparse on the emotion too.
Exactly.
If it's like a bunch of robots walking around, that's not fun to read. You want there to be emotion in there because people want to be emotionally connected to what they read.
It worked for iRobot.
But he was an emotional robot. Yeah.
Personality. So don't go too soap opera-y.
Yeah. You have to find that balance that feels real, but conveys a fair amount of emotion without going over the top. It's a hard balance. It just takes practice.
Another thing that's going to make a difference with that is the type of writing that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing for teenagers, if you're writing for, say, for 10-year-olds versus adults, you're going to have different possible emotion levels.
I try to pay attention to that as I'm critiquing, because we do have people who write from middle grade up to adult in our group, and so I do try to come at it from a different perspective when I'm critiquing Lauren, for instance, who's writing fantasy for adults. I know that her adult audience is going to be accepting of and tolerate a different style of expressing emotion, while in the YA or in the middle grade, I think they tend to be a little more emotional in YA and middle grade, and so I look for bigger expressions of emotion and a more emotionally driven plot line even in the YA and middle grade that I can critique, while I see it as different with the adult work.
Well, and it's true. And it's not just about character emotion, but it's also about reader emotion.
Yeah.
You want to take your reader on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up the book, they read the first chapter, you give them a promise of what the book's going to be like. And if they're not crying when they need to, then your book isn't fulfilling that for them. Or if they're not laughing, or if they're not taken away to this other place, then you need to really keep that in mind too, that your job is to get the reader to feel things.
Yeah.
I also remember hearing that if your character is crying, then your reader will not be, because there's already somebody mourning for the situation, you know. But if your character is stoic and is, you know, if your character is not crying, then your reader is going to feel that a lot. They're going
to
feel that.
If you tell
more.
Them how to feel, they're not going to feel it. If you show them and let them experience it through the character,
but I don't always agree with if your character doesn't cry.
It just depends on how it's set up. So that's what we have to watch for, is are we setting up the emotions properly that they feel real, that they feel like they're coming from a real place. And if they feel like the writer has just sort of manipulated them into this place because that's where they felt like it ought to go for plot reasons, that's when you need to comment on it and say, no, this doesn't feel like it's coming from a natural place. you either need to set it up better or tone it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the same thing with humor.
Yeah.
If you're trying to be funny, you're usually not.
That would explain
and
that.
And sometimes when you're not trying to be funny, you are.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So these Wait, are all things.
You're laughing in the wrong places. Yep.
These are things we like to hear in our critiques, so we know.
Okay, this is something that we probably don't think about much. At least I don't when I'm critiquing a story, but theme. Sometimes it's interesting the theme that comes out of it, because you might not be even aware what your theme is, and it's interesting to hear what other people think your theme mm-hmm. is. For instance, Ava thought the theme of my story was self-pity. So I really had to kind of tone that down.
Sorry.
It's really self-doubt, overcoming self-doubt, you know, with
people
a character that's
me.
Been emotionally abused, which, you know, these types of characters have to. But if it's coming across as self-pity, then it's overdone. So.
People ask me what the theme of this story or that story is, and my mind goes blank. I'm like, I don't know. They're just people
yeah.
going along in their lives and theme. What theme?
What was the theme of Rendar?
I don't know.
I'm not good on themes, so don't ask me to critique for
the
theme, because
that's
Rendar not what I do.
The theme on Rendar was redemption.
And for those of our listeners who didn't catch that, that was a playback from a previous conversation.
That was Ava razzing Lillian. That's what that was.
Yes. Lillian doesn't like redemption, but the theme of her novel.
It wasn't really, but it was funny to watch her face when I told her that.
Razz all you want.
Okay,
just
so spelling and grammar, that's pretty straightforward.
For those who can do it.
Yeah.
Please.
I mean, there's a lot of things I look for.
Don't misspell the word peaked.
Oh. That's your pet peeve.
I've seen that so many times. When somebody's interest is peaked, it's mm-hmm. P-I-Q-U-E-D, not P-E-E-K-E-D.
Or
P-E-A-K-E-D.
Yeah.
So misspellings of words, you know.
There.
Yeah.
There as
it's
in
an it's.
Over there
it's
an
it's.
And
ooh,
it's
apostrophes.
There, yeah. Apostrophes. And
okay,
another
bugaboos.
Thing is putting two sentences together without a comma or a conjunction between.
Was this a problem?
What's a conjunction?
And, but.
Somebody, I read something once about in talking backwards, where into the room she went.
Mm-hmm.
Just refrain.
And
hey,
don't
do
hey,
it.
Hey, you're walking on dyslexic territory.
Sorry.
Some of us cannot just refrain.
And I think that sometimes, just like people have words that they use all the time,
mm-hmm.
they will have, you know, grammatical constructions
yes.
that they'll use all the time.
Yes.
And that's one thing you have to watch for. Is someone using the same grammatical construction
yeah.
over and over again, or do they have like a favorite
mm-hmm.
punctuation mark that they use over and over
yeah.
again?
As
I
human
do.
Beings, we fall into ruts.
Or
oh,
starting
yeah.
a sentence the same way.
Yes.
I look at the beginning of my paragraphs, and if I have a she or a he
mm-hmm.
twice in a row.
Or a name, the
I,
same name.
I change
uh-huh.
it. It's
uh-huh.
got to be changed. It's got to be
That's good.
Shifted.
All right. And then what about resolution? What, for the resolution, you know, the ending of the story, resolving the different characters.
Yeah, when you're looking at
problems.
A whole novel, you have to make sure that unless it's, you know, cliffhangering for a sequel, the major plot threads have to be tied up. And if something is left hanging, you have to point it out. You know, even if it's just a subplot, it's important to tie up those threads in a way that's not going to leave your readers going, well, what about, well, what about?
There was a Brandon Sanderson book, Warbreaker, that I read, and I really liked the book, but he left it so wide open at the end.
He keeps
please
saying
let
he will write a
sequel. Let there be a sequel.
Yeah, wasn't that supposed to be two books?
I don't know,
I don't know.
He did. He left it wide open, and it drives me nuts that I haven't seen the sequel to that book yet. Come on, finish
but
the
you'll
story.
Definitely be reading the sequel, won't
I
you?
I will be reading
yeah.
the sequel.
When you have a series,
you have a story arc that goes from end to end.
It helps. Mm-hmm.
But each book also has its own arc. And you have to make sure that the book arc is wrapped up, even if the full storyline arc is not.
It must be really hard to write a series of books because you have to keep that arc going, and each book has to have its
own. You're like writing episodic series, is like mystery series, because usually those either have a really small continuing arc or no continuing arc at all.
Yeah.
Psych. Undersea doesn't have a continuing arc. They're just...
Well, and keep in mind, too, your reader will have expectations that you don't know or see. And if those aren't tied up at the end, your reader will feel
You got to get those from people who read your whole manuscript for you, because there's probably things that you think you tied up everything important. And then they'll say, well, what about such and such a character that hasn't shown up since chapter 10? I wanted to know what happened to them. And if you hear that from just one person, it might not be a big deal. But if you hear it from two or three people, then you know, okay, that was a serious dangling thread that I need to resolve.
Maybe that's a character that needs to be developed a little bit
more. Or killed off.
Or left out so people won't wonder that anymore. Yeah.
Jocelyn, you pointed out something in my story that I had totally spaced one of my animal characters that I didn't, you didn't know if it died or not in the battle. And then you had a really easy solution, just have her riding the elephant at the end of the story. And that just, you know, okay, now we know he was okay.
Yeah.
But then it made me think of other characters too, and I realized there were other characters I never said what happened. And I don't think you have to say every minor character, but I was able to resolve it really easy in a sentence at the, you know, near the end. For those minor characters.
And they lived happily in Las Vegas.
Yeah, but they, you know, endings don't always have to have everything tied in place. Sometimes those aren't as...
I read a book recently where they did go through and, like, list every minor character and what had happened to them. And, like, okay, I guess that's kind of interesting, but I didn't really need to know
all
this.
If you're not emotionally invested in the character, it really...
And not everything has to work out perfect in the end, because sometimes that's not a really satisfying solution, because it's not real.
Happily
it doesn't seem
ever
real.
After no, is mandatory! No! We must have...
Happy ending. Yeah, there's got to be something
Lily's
happy.
Biting her tongue.
There's blood. Real life is messy.
Yes.
And all the ends are not always tied off.
But as long as you have something satisfying.
There has to be something that feels like good emotional closure.
Or your character will feel gypped.
Even
angry
for tragedy.
And throw the book.
Yep, even for tragedy. There has to be some sort of emotional closure.
Okay. Well, that's all I had for things to look for as you're critiquing. Did I miss anything? Is there anything else anybody wanted to add to that?
As a basic kind of structure, that's dead on. I mean, you could get really, really technical and really, 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 you know, examine the life out of it, but we're not here to discuss why Alice
we
went
are
down
not,
the rabbit hole.
Yeah, we're not trying to teach a Master of Fine Arts class here. We're just...
kind of an overview. Okay, well, we've been talking about how to critique a novel and what are some of the things that you should focus on while you're critiquing a novel, and I think we covered it pretty well, so.
Only took 45 minutes.
Yeah, probably going to split that one in half, so.
Yeah, if there's something here that we've forgotten or that bothers you in a book when you're critiquing, let us know.
Thank you for listening to Writing Snippets.
No words were harmed in the making of this podcast. Go to www.writingsnippets.com for more podcasts.